Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you on a fine summer's day in southwest London, which is not something I've been able to say for the past month, and that is absolutely no exaggeration whatsoever. And to verify my story on that, we have Matt Roberts. Hello, Matt.
Hello. Yes, I've actually escaped from southwest London to my seaside retreat, also known as my parents' house, where it is also a lovely day, but I don't think they've been able to say that for a month either. It has been miserable in the UK in July and the first few days of August. But yeah, today, much better.
Yeah, for anyone not in UK, remember that weather we had during Wimbledon where it rained pretty much all the time, but was also sort of uncomfortably muggy? Well, that continued throughout July, which was a total dud. But anyway, we have high hopes for August, or certainly the next 2 weeks of August before we swan off to New York. We booked our flights this week, Matt. We're very excited. And of course, given that the greatest sporting event in Solihull history happened this week, David Law must be with us, right? He wouldn't miss the opportunity, Matt, to talk about the single greatest achievement in Solihull sporting history. But he wouldn't miss that for a family holiday in Bordeaux. Wouldn't do that.
And the people of Solihull wouldn't possibly arrange for it to happen when David's not here. I mean, it's just not possible. David has to be here, right?
I honestly thought David, I thought we might wake up this morning to messages saying, do you know what? I just can't resist.
Me too.
I secretly bought my recording equipment to France, and I have to be on it.
Well, I know he took his recording equipment to France in case of any emergencies. And honestly,
so
I thought this might be an emergency.
Yeah.
Of a good variety.
Do you think if Dan Evans had won a Grand Slam, he would...
If David's arranging holidays for during Grand Slams, then we've got problems.
We're in serious trouble. Yeah, it is just Matt and I today, if that is not abundantly clear. But that means that we can say whatever we like about David in his absence. So do stay tuned for that over the course of the next hour. We'll, of course, be talking about Dan Evans' biggest ever career victory in Washington. Before that, we'll be talking about Coco Gauff's first ever victory on home soil in Washington. And before that, folks, I need to tell you about Matt's sponsor.
I've been waiting for this.
Yep, we need to keep Matt in clothes, so Wilson are back. This edition of the Tennis Podcast is brought to you in association with Wilson, official ball of the US Open for the last 45 years. That means that the Wilson US Open ball was used by Tracy Austin in taking the 1979 and 1981 titles, Serena Williams winning six titles, and David Wright's Pete Sampras winning the final match of his glorious career against Andre Agassi in the 2002 final. He still haunts the podcast even when he's not here, Matt. Extraordinary.
Is Constant Lestienne going to come up in this ad read?
To mark the 45th year that the Wilson US Open ball is in use, we have two pairs of tickets to this year's US Open to give away to two friends of the Tennis Podcast. The tickets are for Arthur Ashe Stadium Court on Tuesday, the 29th of August. That is the second day of the tournament. The link to enter for Friends of the Pod will be available in the Tennis Podcast newsletter, which goes out, David's written, soon/on Monday night. so we're a bit of flexibility in there for you, Matt. And you have until 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday to enter. So if you're a friend subscriber who doesn't get the newsletter for whatever reason, or you become a friend after the newsletter has gone out, send an email to friends@tennispodcast.net and we will provide you with the link. Although if you're a friend subscriber not getting the newsletter, sort that out because you are missing out on top-notch content. And good luck. What a prize. What a sponsor. let's move to Washington, shall we? And let's lead with Coco Gauff, who beat Marie Sakkari straight sets in the final 6-2, 6-3 to win the biggest title of her career. She also beat Belinda Bencic, Ludmila Samsonova. I mean, just an absolutely commanding week from Coco Gauff. And this is going to be one of those awkward podcasts where we don't know how much to read into anything. It could be a week that we end up looking back on as a huge turning point, or they could end up being just isolated, excellent weeks for certain players. But I really hope this is a massive step forward for Coco Gauff, because in the words, Matt, of something that you tweeted earlier in the week, I think after her semi-final victory or perhaps her quarter-final, there was just no anxiety with watching her this week. You weren't constantly watching that forehand, waiting for it to break down or feeling worried about it breaking down. She just, and I didn't feel like it was on her mind either. She looked unburdened in a way that I haven't seen her for months.
Yeah, that's a really good word for it, I would say. It was a totally different experience watching Coco Gauff this week to watching her, I would kind of say, in the last year, really. And the main reason for that was the forehand, because just as you said, it wasn't breaking down. And therefore, I felt like I really saw the other parts of her game that are so good. You know, it's always been
the backhand.
Of course, the backhand. You know, it's always been a tricky one with Gauff, because it feels like we've spent so long talking about sort of how bad her forehand is. And yet she's been a top 10 player in the world and has reached the Grand Slam final, and she's still a teenager. And it's like, almost feel bad. Like, why are we focusing on this forehand when there's clearly so much else to her game that's so good? It was just impossible to ignore the forehand for so long. And yet this week, I think we really saw why, even with that forehand, she's been able to be such a good player still. Because yes, the backhand is great, but mainly I'm thinking about the retrieval skills and the movement and the physicality that she brings to the court. All of that was just heightened and exceptional this week, and the serve as well. I mean, that was something that Pam Shriver pointed out on Twitter, just how much better Coco Gauff was serving this week. And honestly, I remember watching Coco Gauff as a junior, and the serve was what stood out to me. I was like, wow, she's got an amazing serve. And I don't think that has quite translated or moved over into her time on the Pro Tour. I mean, we've known it be a weapon at times, but it's also been a bit of a weakness for her. And this week it was just pretty much a weapon. She was mixing up the direction, hitting a lot of aces, being really assertive with that shot generally. And yeah, she was in such a great sort of mood all week, sort of clearly loving the fact that her tennis was so good, confident, thriving, flourishing. It was just so great to see Coco Gauff like that. And yeah, three top 20 wins, biggest title of her career, first in the US, it just feels like such a big deal. And I don't think you can completely fix your forehand in 3 weeks, you know, like we saw Coco Gauff at Wimbledon and a few weeks ago and the forehand was still a problem. Like, I don't think it's necessarily done completely, but it's a really good first step. And I'm sure there'll be backward steps in this journey to making that forehand what she wants it to be. But this feels like the first time we've seen a breakthrough in a very long time. It felt like the sort of week she needed. She needed to change the narrative around her a bit. And I feel like she managed to do that this week. It was so great to see.
And from how she was talking all week, I get the impression that the results, the proof in the pudding coming this quickly is a surprise to her ahead of the tournament. Being asked about the new coaching team she's put together, she hired Per Riba at the start of the summer, and she notably added Brad Gilbert to the team this week. I think the first week of them being all together was this week in Washington. She described it as a rebuilding period, and then she starts rebuilding and immediately looks completely rebuilt. I mean, as you say, of course, she isn't. She will face sterner tests, and I just don't think it's possible to put the kind of technical woes that she's had behind her in this shorter space of time. But it is interesting that, you know, I wonder if just that feeling of bringing in a new team, resetting, putting a stamp on it all of, okay, this isn't about results, this is about some building blocks. Maybe that relieved some of the pressure that she's been feeling. And she never complains about pressure or really talks about it, but of course she feels it, because of course we all pile it onto her, and you know, we all go into every press conference of hers and ask her about her forehand, and she deflects, doesn't she? She's been big time deflecting about it, but that is revealing in itself.
Yeah. And I think when we mention that new coaching team, again, that's always a tricky thing to bring up, because you don't want to just absolutely say, oh, this is all down to a new coaching team. You know, Coco Gauff is still the one who has to go out on the court and implement it and get it right. And also, you know, tennis players are independent contractors. They're the ones who hire the coaches. So if we are giving the coaching team credit, that's also credit for Coco Gauff for finding the right coach, you know. And I think,
and being willing,
yeah,
being humble enough to say something needs to change.
Yeah, and I think it was quite a long process for her to find Riba, who she linked up with in the summer. I think she said she spoke to a lot of coaches. Eventually sort of landed on the right one, sort of chemistry wise, and just adding Brad Gilbert in for a bit more experience as well. I think it is looking like a really good, astute move and really good combination at the moment.
How surprised were you to see Brad Gilbert pop up in the Coco Gauff box?
Fairly.
Scale of 1 to 10. Yeah, fairly. 7 or 8 out of 10, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm never surprised to see Brad Gilbert.
Like, around.
Around. He's always there.
Yeah.
But in the Coco Gauff coaching box, yeah, took me back.
Yeah. The other new thing that she's brought to the party this week is a celebration dance. I know correlation is not causation, but is that Brad Gilbert related? We might never know. Is that something they've been working on? But I think we like it, right?
Oh, really liked it. Yeah. It was just indicative of this confidence and this mood that she seemed to be in, I think, all week. And also the other thing I really loved was after one of her matches, she gave this speech to the crowd. I think it was the one against Benchik. She sort of gave this speech to the crowd about how she'd done her CPR course very recently, because a lot of people in the stands were fainting or passing out because it was so hot in Washington. A lot of matches were interrupted, and Coco Gauff just gave this speech at the end of one of her matches saying, yeah, I was ready to jump in there. I've done my course. And she said, you know, everyone should do it. It only took me an hour, 90 minutes. I booked it on the way back from Wimbledon. And it was just a reminder that she is so mature. And I think that was such a defining feature of Coco Gauff. Well, all her career, really. But again, because I've been so caught up in this forehand narrative, I've sort of forgotten about those sort of parts of Coco Gauff. And that is probably a me problem. Those parts have still been there. But it just felt like we saw all of that again this week. We saw the confidence. We saw the great game. We saw the maturity. And I just wasn't thinking about the things I've been thinking about with her game recently in a long time. And I love it when a player changes that narrative. And yeah, I thought it was such an uplifting week watching Gauff.
It's got to be one of the toughest looking tournaments to sit and watch tennis. And I say that as if everybody there is there because they've got a gun to their heads. They've all chosen to buy tickets to go and watch the tennis, and I'm very glad they do. And it looks like a really great event. I'd love to go to it one day, except that the climate at the time of the year that it's held does put me off. And the fact that there is no shade on that centre court anywhere. There is no relief from it. And actually the flapping of fans in the crowd is, I'm surprised the players don't get more distracted by it, quite frankly. I mean, maybe they do and they just accept that, you know, fans got a fan, because it looks so deeply unpleasantly hot. There's some kit that could do with being made from sweat wicking fabric. Well, there has been this week. There have been some very, very, very sweaty tennis players. Big week for Maria Sakkari reaching a final and getting over the semi-final hump, although she also has a final hump. She's a sort of two-humped camel. And I know that's it's unfair to put an entirely negative spin on this for Sakkari. It's a fantastic week. She produced some, I mean, when she was good in that fight, and against Pegula, in fact, but when she was good in that final, the quality of the hitting from both of them was just divine. But you called it full-blooded, didn't you? They just came out thwacking it. And I got the feeling that they both quite liked the feel of one another's ball. They were both really middling it. But the scoreline in the end looked quite one-sided in Coco Gauff's favour. And I don't think it was an egg lay from Maria Sakkari, as she has had in some finals, but it was still a failure to find her best tennis. And I thought maybe a breakthrough had come after the semi-final, because I really thought she was Sakkari-ing in that semi-final. She's a set and a break up, and then it all starts disappearing from her. And I just thought, this is absolute classic. It's all going to go.
I've seen this film before. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And Maria Sakkari did not like the ending. And she steadied that ship. And I was very impressed with how she did that. And the sound coming off the racket when she was cracking that forehand. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but she looks as fit as she ever has. I mean, it's never looked possible for her to be even an iota more fit, but maybe she's found that iota. But and yet still butted up against the ceiling in the final, I think.
Yeah. That's it. I had such a feeling of dread watching that semi-final, as she was a set and 4-1 up and love 30, and you know, it was within touching distance, but you just knew that it was going to get away from her. So the fact that it did get away from her, you know, it's the line that Mary Carrillo gives, you know, she choked but she won anyway. You know, that's sort of what Maria Sakkari has needed to find. You know, yes, it's not going to be plain sailing to get through these matches. There's so much baggage, there's so much scar tissue now. But when she did get through that third set against Pegula in the semi-final, and she was brilliant in that set, just blazing winners all over the court, it felt like such a big moment for her to finally win a semi-final. She'd lost her last six. She hadn't won any this year. And then I thought, wow, okay, big moment for Maria Sakkari, cleared that hurdle. And then I was like, oh, I forgot she's also got a final problem. Like, yeah. Because it had been so long since she'd reached the final. I was completely obsessed with the semi-final. she's also got this final problem. She's won that one title in Rabat in 2019 and then lost, well, it was six in a row. It's now seven finals in a row since then. And I didn't think she played that well in the final. I think there were moments. There was a mini fight back after she initially went a breakdown, and then there was a really close game, which she ended up losing in that first set. And then in the second set, it was okay to begin with, but then I think she lost, you know, a string of points just to sort of lose the momentum in that match. And it was mainly unforced errors. It's quite a fraught experience to watch Sakkari when she's like that. And yeah, I think I often think when a player breaks through a barrier, you know, like when Aryna Sabalenka finally won a Grand Slam semi-final this year, I often think, oh, well, that's them changed now. You know, they've done it now. They'll be able to do it again. But I think we've seen with Sabalenka at Roland Garros and at Wimbledon that there is still a bit of a semi-final Grand Slam problem for her. That's something she got over once, but she's got to try and get over it again. And I think Sakkari is in a similar spot. Okay, she got through the semi-final problem, but the final problem is still there. And I don't know, she was really upset in the speeches afterwards, wasn't she? And in a way I was a bit surprised, actually, because earlier this year I remember she tweeted, didn't she, about her semi-final record. Someone said, like, Kudermatova is coming for your semi-final record, Sakkari, and tagged her in because Kudermatova has lost a load of semi-finals. And Sakkari tweeted, very, very self-aware, as a joke, she was like, I'm unbeatable when it comes to my semi-final record. And I felt like that was a really healthy response to it, in a way.
Yeah.
But maybe now it's just all catching up with her, and she seemed upset. She was a little bit defensive in the press conference about her record, understandably, because that's only one way of looking at it, isn't it? You know, the other way of looking at it is she's constantly putting herself in this position. She's more consistent than pretty much anyone on tour. And she's been a top 10 player for so long. And, you know, there are lots of positives to the fact that she reaches so many semifinals. But it is an issue. And I think she's sort of really coming to terms with that. And it's just tricky for her at the moment.
I do wonder if, you know, given everything we've talked about with Coco Gauff and her team and everything, and I know actually with Gauff, a lot of that, or in the first instance, a lot of that team change-up was enforced, wasn't it? Her previous coach had to step away for personal issues. It wasn't Coco's choice for them to cease working together. But I do wonder if she needs a new voice, a different dynamic in that coaching team. And I know she is totally happy with the coaching team. She is always so quick and so effusive with her praise for Tom Hill, her coach. And there was a lot of focus on their dynamic in the Netflix episode that she was spotlighted in, I think episode 3 of the first batch of episodes. And, you know, she credits him with a lot of her success, and I of course don't want to take away from that at all, but as I say, she's butting up against a ceiling. And I don't know, there seems to be a codependency there, the way she looks over at him searching for something, and the way that there was an interruption yesterday, wasn't there? I think an instance where Coco Gauff's CPR skills might have been called into question. There was somebody in some distress in the crowd, and she's looking over at Tom Hill, and I felt like he needed to say something, just to say something, you know, needed to give her something. And he started talking about her needing more height over the net, and maybe that was tactical genius. I don't know, but I feel like a new or different voice or dynamic. It's not personal to Tom Hill. I'm sure he's a great coach and she's really comfortable with him, but maybe that comfort is an issue. I don't know.
Yeah. It's such a tricky one, isn't it? Because, you know, Carlos Alcaraz is always looking over at his box as well. And, you know, and yet,
yep, So true.
And yet you don't get the same feeling that you get when Zachary's doing it. I was watching that final thinking, just as an experiment, it would be interesting to see Zachary play a match with no one in her box. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd just like to see how that would look, what that would look like, because I agree with you, it does really seem like a dependency,
a habit which I think
has got her in this position. It's been really good for her, but you know, in the words of Billie Jean King, maybe needs a jolt, maybe just needs something different. And a jolt sometimes is uncomfortable, perhaps, but it's maybe what you need.
Yeah, exactly. Going to be interesting this week in Montreal, isn't it? I'll come on to talk about that and some of the first round matchups and how the draw might potentially play out. The women are in Montreal, the men are in Toronto. Just before we move on to talk about the men in Washington, wrapping up WTA events from the week just gone, we had the event in Prague, which finished mere hours ago because of how much it rained in Prague. Apparently they've been having the same weather that we've been having. Linda Noskova, one of the very many young Czech women.
Linda's.
They're looking incredibly promising. She reached the final and was very impressive all week, but beaten by Nao Hibino, 6-4, 6-1 in the final. Hibino's also in the doubles final, which I think is yet to be played, also due to rain. Maybe Prague will also feature in next week's podcast or Thursday's podcast.
Yeah, and I think when a lot of rain's involved, the organisers do not want the same people involved in the singles and doubles, because then you've got to start providing after suitable rest and all that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, the weather has no time for suitable rest.
No.
It's like when the cricket's rained off and you've got two sessions to bowl out the Aussies and they're still taking lunch. What are you doing?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court Courtsers and Longlin all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TennisPod20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Right. Moving on to the men's tournament in Washington, which was won by the new world number 21, Dan Evans. He beat Talon Griekspoor 7-5, 6-3 in the final, topping off, not just on paper, the best week of Dan Evans' career. This is his second career title, his first at 500 level, but in tennis terms, the best week of Dan Evans' career. We've watched a lot of Dan Evans. We're Brits, and we also like the way he plays, don't we? He's a swashbuckling watch at his best. I've never seen him play that well. He was electrifying this week in Washington, Matt. It was feed it into my veins type of tennis.
It was really fun waking up in the morning and Dan Evans being the highlight reel guy who had gone viral overnight because of something that he'd done.
He was a tennis TV dream.
Yeah. And he was a David Lord dream because yes, David, you know, has a Solihull connection to Dan Evans, and he loves watching him play as well. And I tended to find those highlight reel moments via David on holiday. He posted it on his own personal Twitter. He'd retweeted it from the tennis podcast. He'd sent it to about three different WhatsApp groups that we're both in.
I love it when David has somehow found a facility in his life to be able to retweet himself.
He loves it.
He loves it. Yeah.
It was like, oh, Matt and Catherine aren't up. I'll put it on Alcarazmataz, see if Matt's up. Just, I need to talk about Dan Evans. And honestly, it was incredible. It was a stretch of tennis against Francis Tiafoe, I think, which was the most eye catching.
If anyone listening hasn't seen the highlight reel from that match, which has been floating around on all social media, just make a point of seeking it out, because I know highlight reels, you know, they always look good. You don't see the bad stuff on a highlight reel. And of course, not every point was what you were seeing, but it really was about as good as a highlight reel gets. And I say that in the full knowledge that we are in the Carlos Alcaraz era. It really was extraordinary.
Yeah. It just a guy whose skill level is so high, you know, we've always known that. And he was just exploring the upper limits of that level. Mm. And it was just incredible to see drop shots, lobs, slice passing shot winners. I mean, everything you could possibly think of, he was doing out there. And he did similar against Grigor Dimitrov in the semifinals. I think the final was a little less showy. It was interrupted this time by rain. But still some great flashes, and David, I know, was very impressed with the blend of tennis that Evans had, attack, defence. It just felt like he was, yes, coming up with these amazing shots, but also balanced and playing within himself at times. And I think that was a really great combination. And I don't know, this has come from nowhere, because he hadn't won a match since April. It, 3 month stretch without winning. He'd spoken during the grass court season about how he wasn't looking forward to playing Wimbledon even, because he just wasn't getting the results. And this therefore strikes me as kind of the perfect example of how Dan Evans has improved over the years, because, you know, when he was a talented young player, he didn't work hard enough. And if he'd been going through a slump like this, I don't think he would have worked through it and powered through it. But that's exactly what he's done over the last 3 months. Just kept his head down, kept working, kept sort of believing and trusting that his class is permanent, you know, and therefore he's now been rewarded with the biggest title of his career. It's fantastic. And I've no idea whether he is thinking like this. Maybe David can ask him, but I would certainly be thinking that yes, it was great a couple of years ago when he won that first title. That was a really big moment. But that was a title that doesn't really exist anymore. You know, it was one of the Australian Open,
the Great Ocean Road Adelaide Penguin Trophy.
Right? Yeah, it was one of those. Melbourne 1 or 2 with a fancy name. It was a pandemic tournament that came up because players were in a bubble and they needed matches. And it was great that he won that. It was a big moment. But I almost feel like, in a way, winning a really prestigious title like Washington, you know, you see the list of names and former winners who've won that event. He's the first Brit to win it since Tim Henman 20 years ago. I don't know, that just must, I'd have thought that must mean something even more to win such a prestigious stop on the tour. And I think it's brilliant for him.
Yeah, I think the courts in Washington suit him perfectly. Just favour that blend, favour somebody that's got natural talent and the ability to respond respond differently depending on the challenge, and it rewards net play. But you know, we're not talking about serve and volley, first and second serve net play, but somebody that's got the instincts to be at the net when it's most required. And Dan Evans absolutely has those instincts. And I'm trying to remember. I think the whole week actually was a fantastic advert for a fast hard court. That is how hard courts should be, I think, what we saw in Washington. I think they're pretty similar to the US Open. I mean, the US Open has produced really good tennis over the last few years. They've felt quick, and I know it's the balls as well. It's the blend between the balls and the courts. Can't quite remember what to expect in terms of speed in Toronto and Montreal, and whether there's much of a difference between Toronto and Montreal. I just hope it's all the same as Washington, because I loved it. Dan Evans and plenty of others, just it rewarded swashbuckling tennis. And
yes,
swashbuckle is what I want to see.
Yeah, and I mean, Evans reached the semis last year in Montreal, so
I've forgotten that.
I think he can thrive in those conditions as well. I always think Cincinnati's quite quick.
Yes,
and yeah. The US Open recently has been as well, hasn't it? Yeah, quick courts, attacking tennis. And shout out to Griekspoor as well, because he was brilliant this week. And he's someone who likes to come forward as well, and is pretty good up at the net. And I've always had him in the same category as like a Struff. Like, why aren't you ranked a bit higher? Why aren't you better? Because whenever I watch you, you've got really nice strokes and you seem quite dangerous. And he's having a great season. He's already won a couple of titles. He was looking for his third title this year. And I think matchup wise is a good one for Evans. He'd already beaten him a couple of times coming into that match.
He was able to make him look a bit one dimensional, wasn't he?
Yeah. Whereas Griekspoor, I think, really thrived against Taylor Fritz in the semifinals. You know, it was a bit more of a hitting contest. Fritz, I think, was a bit tired after doing double duty the day before and in the heat, and he won that first set and then tailed off. But Griekspoor was brilliant. And just a fun week of tennis in Washington.
Yeah, just to make it less fun, just to pick up on something else you were saying earlier. I mean, it was this whole week for Dan Evans. We had a chat, didn't we, on our WhatsApp group of what on earth has changed and clicked into gear for Dan Evans, because he exactly as you say, he hadn't won a match for 3 months, and suddenly he's winning a tournament and winning two matches in one day. That is an unreal turnaround. And David sort of wasn't biting on the chat, was he? He was sort of saying, well, he's been telling us he's been playing well in practice and that he'll trust that it'll come eventually. And I don't know, I was searching for some sort of headline-y, sensationalist reason for the turnaround. And it's so unsexy, isn't it? But it's just a reminder that when these tennis players and all sportsmen and women trot out these lines about process, not outcome, and we all roll our eyes and just think, I can't, that is not a quote, mate. That is the most boring thing anyone's ever said. But it's true, isn't it? It is absolutely true, and they're right to say it, and they're right to think that way, and you just got to trust it, haven't you? I mean, I do think that is also something that can be hidden behind if you want to be in denial about where you are. But that doesn't mean it's, you know, just because that can happen doesn't mean it does happen. And he's been telling us all throughout this slump, I'm playing well, I'm doing the right things, I've just got to trust it will come. I'm frustrated, but I trust, as you said, Matt, class is permanent and it will come, and here it is coming, you know, everything coming together. And yeah, it's just a reminder that as much as it's not a great quote to hear people saying that, doesn't mean it's not true, doesn't mean they're fobbing us off or not telling us the gritty truth. Sometimes the gritty truth is that sport is about process, not outcome. And that is incredibly boring. Mm. But well done to Dan Evans. Taylor Fritz and Andy Murray played just the most extraordinary match, didn't they, earlier in the week. Murray was playing so well again. I think the courts really, really rewarded his style of play and brought the best out of him. He was thundering that forehand. You just love to see him playing tennis like that. It was real similarities to me to the Tsitsipas match, not in terms of the rhythm of it and the coming back the next day and all of that jazz, but just my impressions were, oh wow, Murray's playing serious tennis here, serious top level tennis against a serious top level tennis player, and oh, he's lost.
Yeah. I always get a slight wave of sadness watching Murray play like that against one of today's top players like Tsitsipas or like Fritz, because honestly, I do think Murray's better than these guys. He's got a level and a class above, and yet he's not quite able to bring it because of, or he's restricted in bringing it because of the fact that he's got a metal hip. And I'm always just struck by this, what if that hadn't happened and where would Murray be now? You know, we sort of debated that on a recent episode for Friends of the Pod, and I can't get that out of my mind when I watch Murray come so close in these matches and end up losing them, because, you know, that's not to say that Fritz and Tsitsipas aren't great players, and Murray is playing at a high level, and it takes great performances to beat him, and Tsitsipas was awesome at Wimbledon and Fritz was awesome again in Washington in that match. So, you know, in a way it's a positive. It's a way of praising Murray to say that he's still able to produce that kind of tennis. And yet, I don't know, you see him construct points against Fritz. You know, they're trading backhands and you think, oh, Murray's a step ahead in this rally. And then he throws in the drop shot and then he passes him. And it's like, it's all panned out perfectly for him. And yet, you know, because he's got that metal hip, he can't do it like he used to be able to do it for so long. And there are limitations on what he can do. And I don't know. I'm finding that genre of match quite difficult. And I feel like we're seeing it quite a lot at the moment, because Murray is playing well and yet he is still being beaten by players that fundamentally I think he's sort of better than, but have got that edge on him at the moment.
I feel really haunted by that line he gave in his pre-Wimbledon press conference about playing until his hip runs out.
Yeah, wasn't it finishes?
Finishes. Play until my hip finish. Like, how will you know? Will it just disintegrate? I've just got this mental image of this hip sort of being slowly ground down like a meat mincer. And now I've given that image to all of you. You're welcome. You mentioned Tsitsipas. He won the title in Los Cabos, Mexico. He beat Alex de Minaur in the final 6-3, 6-4. I really struggled to watch any of this because it all happens in the middle of the night for us because of time difference and the fact that they can't play during the day because it is so hot. And by all accounts, it was still extraordinarily hot at night. A friend of mine was out there working for the ATP and she was struggling with the heat.
Yeah, it's a very difficult tournament for us to watch. The headlines, I think, are that really surprising that this was his first title on an outdoor hard court. I had not realized that. All of his previous nine titles were either on an indoor hard court, on a clay court, or he won that one on grass in Mallorca last year. He hadn't won a title on an outdoor hard court. I couldn't believe that when I realized it. Maybe a bit like what we were saying with Fritz last week in Atlanta. Like, I'm not sure this tells us anything new about Tsitsipas. I still feel like it's the slams where he's going to be judged because he's a top, top player. But he sort of needed this week. He's been in been in a bit of a weird place on the tennis court for a while now.
And on Instagram, yeah.
He traditionally doesn't do so well in the second half of the season. So the, again,
no, he goes 6-love, 5-love down to Daniel Galan in this part of the season.
That's a big thing for him. He's won 10 out of 10 matches now against Alex de Minaur, which, again, I found quite surprising. Like, that's just... Why is that not a slightly closer head-to-head? I mean, I guess...
And they're not close matches, are they?
No, generally? Like, really not.
Yeah, it's really one-sided.
De Minaur doesn't really even win sets in that matchup. I think he's, you know... I think he's quite a defensive player, isn't he, de Minaur? And maybe he just can't exploit that Tsitsipas backhand in a way that some others can. And Tsitsipas jumps on him and plays really well. Two other headlines for Tsitsipas in Los Cabos. One is that he seems to be working with Mark Philippoussis again.
Yeah.
After that seemed to end, Philippoussis was with him in Los Cabos and his father wasn't. I don't
think.
Does
that mean that there was that weird Instagram post, wasn't there, on Tsitsipas's Instagram?
Yeah. No, I don't think it does mean that.
No, in Apostolos's voice that sounded like a goodbye.
Yeah, but then I don't know when that was. That was post Roland Garros, maybe, and he's been
there at Wimbledon, wasn't he?
Yeah. I think the father's still part of the team. It's just that Philippoussis is back part of the team, which I think is a good thing. I do think Philippoussis is a good influence, if he can have influence.
If he can have his voice heard.
That's kind of the problem.
It's an awkward one after, you know, Tsitsipas's quotes after that relationship ended were, I needed to only have one voice. There were too many voices and I decided that voice needed to be my dad.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, there are questions to be, be asked there.
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder whether that will be more of a template for them, that yes, they're both part of the team, but only maybe one travels to some events and some events they're both at. I don't know, that's purely speculation, but, you know, it obviously worked for him this week. And then the final note is that his toughest match of the week was against Nicholas Jarry. Just putting that out
there.
Who is good. That was a very good match. That was a match I did watch, actually, because it was so late in Los Cabos that it was
with Nicholas Jarry.
That it was early here and I could watch it, and I'm obsessed with Nicholas Jarry, even though he let me down.
Have you seen that Paolo Badosa's started wearing a headband? Like Tsitsipas.
Right. I mean, where though? She's not been playing.
I saw there were some Instagram pictures.
Of course.
She only exists on Instagram for me now, not on a tennis court. Anyway, just drop that bomb on you. Before we talk about Dominic Thiem, he reached a final.
Yes.
He won a deciding set tiebreak, and it all happened in Kitzbühel, of course. Ended up losing out to Sebastian Baez, 6-3, 6-1. He's, in the words of David Law, sneaky good, Sebastian Baez, particularly on clay. Beat David's pick, Thomas Martin Echeverry, in the semi-finals? Was that quarter? Yeah, semi-finals. And went on to win that title. But we are going to talk about Dominic Thiem. And I'm going to ask you the impossible question, Matt. What does it mean? Is this just a one-off Kitzbühel-y week for Dominic Thiem, or is this a marker on the path to all the way back?
Could it be somewhere in between? I feel like it's a step to getting closer to all the way back. I don't know how... That is so vague. And
yeah,
I hate myself for saying it.
A marker on the path.
Yeah, like I'm not sure that he's ever going to get all the way back. I think I'm coming to terms with that, maybe.
Oh, I feel like that's the first time I've heard you say that out loud.
But I really think he can do a lot. He can get a lot closer to where he is now, and this therefore was a really big week for him, because we saw a lot of things from Thiem that we just haven't seen that much of recently. He came back from a set down in three matches. He won two tie breaks in his first match, saving a load of set points. And generally, he was playing well, or playing better, the bigger the moment got. And that is something that we just haven't seen. In absolutely extraordinary match against Laszlo Gera in the semifinals. He didn't lose serve in that match. 3.5 hours, he held all 18 service games, which again is a good sign because it means a sort of sustained level. He's not having the lapses that he's been having in recent matches. Saved all 13 break points he faced, and then saved 5 match points as well, including one with an absolutely huge forehand winner. And, you know, again, it's a fine line, isn't it? Because maybe if that had gone out, we'd have thought, what are you doing, Dominic, going for that shot on that point? But because it went in, my analysis is, oh, he was courageous and he was gutsy and he was bold and he backed himself in the big moment. And that's a step up, you know? And I was just so happy to see him happy, you know, because he's been really stressed on the tennis court and sad, and it's been a tough watch. He's been internalizing, I think, a lot of frustration, and then getting really angry with himself when he does let it out, and it's just been tricky. But this week, to see the look on his face after some of the wins that he battled through was just brilliant. And no, obviously he can't play a home tournament on clay every week. It was, as you said, there is a Kitzbühel element to this, I think. That was a big factor. And the crowd and the atmosphere was, you know, old Davis Cup style. It was unbelievable, the support and the noise that there was for him. So of course that, you know, you'd think that would help him play better, and he's now gonna go on a hard court and it's not gonna be in Kitzbühel, you know. The conditions were better for him this week to be able to play that tennis. But I just think he needed some positive feelings and he got them. And it feels important. I'm hoping
and
so.
And to win some close matches. We'd seen him lose so many close matches. Yeah. Did you hear Sebastian Baez in the trophy ceremony pay tribute to Dominic Thiem, as you do, in a trophy speech, and say, I you were a hero of mine growing up. You really inspired me. I was like, aren't you two about the same age? Shocked to discover Sebastian Baez is only 22, but also like, come on, Dominic Thiem is still, you know, still let's not talk about him like he's Stan Wawrinka yet. He's still the next gen.
Baez is
sneaky good.
Well,
and unexpectedly just only 22 years old.
Incredibly inconsistent. I mean, the summer of this time last year, he won Borstad and then lost 17 of his next 18 matches, and then won Cordoba this year in February. And then since Cordoba, has lost 16 more matches, including 4 in a row. And now he's just won Kitzbühel.
Yeah, he wasn't a factor in the clay court season.
No,
was he at all? Didn't pop up.
He just pops up now and again and wins a title, and then and then, in Nadal's words, does a disaster.
Predictions nightmare, Sebastian Baez.
How? I mean, don't want to, you know, say too much against David when he's not here to defend himself. But David's behaviour on WhatsApp towards Dominic Thiem this week was
unacceptable.
It was pretty egregious, I would say.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a hate crime.
Yeah.
Yeah, David picked Thomas Martin Echeverry to win the title this week. And we have nothing against Thomas Martin Echeverry here on the Tennis Podcast. We've enjoyed his tennis very much this week. But you've got to be a hard-hearted human not to be wanting the best for Dominic Thiem, and not really a tennis fan. Like, tennis wants him back to come all the way back, or somewhere near to all the way back. But because David had picked Thomas Martin Echeverry to win the title, and he really only cares about his
himself
standing in the predictions competition, he didn't give two hoots about Dominic Thiem.
Yeah, I said in a hypothetical final when they were both in the semis between Echeverry and Thiem, who's your heart with, David? And he said Echeverry for the predictions points.
That's it really the reason took me David's back, not actually. On the pod. I know David Law, and I've known him a long time. And I do. I have to keep reminding myself he is good people. But that was egregious. Yeah. This week, the ATP is in Toronto. First round matches include Guillaume Fils, who had a good week in Washington, didn't he? Couple of big wins. Beat Alexander Bublik. Mm. Got himself a warning for lack of effort en route to that victory. That was wild. Dimitrov against Choric, first round. Andy Murray against Lorenzo Sonego. Milos Raonic against Francis Tiafoe. And Alex de Minaur against Cameron Norrie. They play doubles together quite a lot, don't they, de Minaur and Norrie. Alcaraz is back. Holger Rune, Stefanos Tsitsipas, Jannik Sinner, they're all in the top half. Rublev, Ruud, Fritz and Medvedev all in the bottom half. There's been some very cute Medvedev with daughter content floating around this week. Medvedev in dad mode is very, very wholesome stuff. The WTA is in Montreal. First round matches include Haddad Meyer against Badosa, Madison Keys against Venus Williams, Jennifer Brady against Yelena Ostapenko, Camilla Giorgi against Bianca Andreescu. Caroline Wozniacki is coming back this week. She starts against qualifier Kim Birrell, the Aussie, on Tuesday and could play Marketa Vondrosheva in round two. I'm really interested in the level that Wozniacki's going to bring. And that's, let's face it, a kind first round draw for Wozniacki. Świątek, Goff, Pegula, Sakkari are all in the top half. The bottom half is Garcia, Rybakina, Kvitova, Sabalenka, and the number one ranking is on the line this week. Sabalenka can reach number one if she wins the title and Świątek fails to reach the quarterfinals.
We need to enjoy this week while we can, because it's the dying 1 week Masters 1000 event.
I'm so pumped for it.
I know.
I don't have to stress about what round we're in. Yeah, it's kind of in lots of ways, the ideal 1000 week for me. I like the two cities thing. I like the alternating. I like it being 1 week. That's all great. The prize money situation is incredibly suboptimal. Total men's prize money for 2023 is $6,600,000. And for the women in Montreal, it's $2,788,000. So that's no good. But hopefully something that will improve in years to come. And we will follow it closely.
Yeah, we've got two more years of Canada and Cincinnati as 1 week events, but there will be 2 week Masters events in 2025.
Do you think that can be reversed? I feel like nobody likes it. Or do you feel like now the genie's out of the bottle?
I think the people making the decisions like it.
Okay.
We don't. Remember when we had influence at Wimbledon? We no longer have that.
No. Even less with David not here. Yeah. On to happier things. We have a mascot for this episode, and that mascot is Rosie. Not my Rosie, but another lovely Rosie, an 18-month-old golden retriever owned by Adam. Rosie's favourite activities include coming along to tennis and helping to pick up the tennis balls, stealing socks and looking cute. Wholeheartedly agree, Adam. Rosie is absolutely gorgeous. I love a golden retriever. They are the epitome of man's best friend, aren't they? And we have a lovely picture of Rosie pictured with tennis balls on what looks like an AstroTurf court.
Yeah.
That's my assessment. kind of knees, AstroTurf. Oh, yes. Sorry, you're not a fan, are you? But kind on the joints. You'll appreciate that one day, Matt.
But I can still beat David on it.
We got another podcast without David on Thursday. I already can't wait. David has his mascot, Maisie, with whom he and Thomas Martin Echeverry failed to score points. I can't talk because my pick lost in the opening round to Alexander Shevchenko. Sorry, Zenya, for that. Matt and Darwin didn't fare much better this week. Who did you have, Matt?
I had Jessica Pegula, and yes, Maria Sakkari chose to break her semi-final duck in that one. So, sorry, Darwin.
It literally happens to the best of us every week, Matt. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And we will save shout-outs for when David is back, because who wants a David Lawless shout out? Nobody. Or maybe some people. And if that is what you'd like, pop it in the notes for your shout out.
This is a hashtag learning from last year, when we did get some emails from people when one of you or David was missing, and shout outs, they just weren't the same. So we're
We don't want to shortchange anyone. So we will be back with shout-outs next Monday. That's when David will be back. Matt and I will be back on Thursday with our midway Montreal and Toronto review. And we will speak to you then. In the meantime, sign up to the newsletter. Enter the competition if you're a friend of the pod, or if you'd like to become a friend of the pod in order to enter the competition. The link to do that is in our show notes, as is the link to subscribe to the newsletter. Tell your friends and tune in again on Thursday. We'll speak to you then.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love, and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.